D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We are live at 5 Iron Golf in Midtown, 202 21st Avenue South. We've got a giveaway. I will tell you about it momentarily. In the meantime, let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Jeff Marek, host of The Sheet on Daily Faceoff. Jeff, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. How's everything in Nashville? Must be exciting times. Who thought we'd be talking about playoffs this time of year?
Certainly I didn't. I don't think anybody did around Thanksgiving when the Predators were at the bottom of the NHL standings. But they've got a big one again tonight at Utah to wrap up their final road trip of the season. So, Jeff, let's start with the Predators GM search. You are plugged in around the league. So what is your sense of where the Predators are in their GM search, and who could emerge as the front runner for the job?
So Nashville's search is fascinating, right? Like, I find this more interesting than the Toronto GM search or the New Jersey Devils GM search, because, you know, this is a relatively new ownership group, as you well know. So this is one of those, and we've been hearing about this for a while, this is one of those nets that's cast really, really wide. Like, part of this is, of course, you know, find the next general manager of the Nashville Predators. But two, it's really giving the organization and this new owner a sort of real good snapshot of what's out there and what's available. Now, the thing about new ownership groups is, like Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, always sort of, while he doesn't make the decisions for teams, he does have a hand on the wheel and try to sort of, you know, steer teams towards certain individuals, you know, reminds owners about, you know, biographies of certain general managers, what they've done, where they've done it, et cetera. Like, I remember when the Tampa Bay Lightning, when Jeff Vinnick bought the team, he wanted to hire Lou Lamoriello, you know, legendary general manager, Stanley Cup champ, wanted to hire him to lead the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Gary sort of nudged him to this guy in Detroit who was an assistant general manager by the name of Steve Yzerman, which worked out great for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So as much as this is a GM search by the Nashville Predators for the Nashville Predators, this is Bill Haslam's first GM hire. So the net is cast wide. There's a lot of people that have done Zoom calls. There's some people that have come in for in-person meetings with the ownership group. So This one's interesting because they can go a number of different directions based on what type of team they see having in the next little while.
Jeff, when the Devils announced earlier this week that they parted ways with Tom Fitzgerald, a lot of people connected the dots between Fitzgerald and Nashville because of his time here as the first captain in franchise history. And I do want to be clear, I do not want the Predators to hire someone with any sort of affiliation to the franchise, even though Fitzgerald has not been a part of the Predators for around 25 years. I do think the Predators need an injection of fresh blood, excuse me. But let's put that to the side. How would you assess Tom Fitzgerald's tenure as Devils GM, and what would be the pros and cons of the Predators hiring him as either GM or president of hockey operations?
Great question. So it didn't end, like, let's put it this way. It didn't end well for Tom Fitzgerald. Like, you had a situation where essentially Quinn Hughes, then in Vancouver, was, you know, I don't want to say lobbying, but I mean, everybody in the NHL knew that his preferred destination one day was to play with his brothers in New Jersey. I mean, Jim Rutherford, president of hockey operations with the Vancouver Canucks, at an end of season presser, you know, said that, as a matter of fact, said, you know, one day he wants to go play with his brothers. And then all of a sudden, all of our antennas went up. And as one general manager told me, the Eastern Conference GM, if you have one of the best players in the NHL pretty much openly lobbying to come to your team, saying that he wants to come to your team, and you can't make it happen, then you have real problems. And the problems with the New Jersey Devils by the end with Tom Fitzgerald was contracts and specifically no trade clauses. Now, I know Tom Fitzgerald will dispute that, and he said that it wasn't for the no-trade clauses, that they weren't able to make a deal for Quinn Hughes. But nonetheless, we all look at that structure, and it's kind of a Gordian knot. Like, that's how much the general manager handcuffed himself. Now, backing up, before that happened, Tom Fitzgerald was kind of on a run with New Jersey. You know, the New Jersey Devils were that team that we kept saying, all they need is a save, all they need is a save. If they can get a save, they can be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. They went out and got Jacob Markstrom, and for a while, that really worked. But if you follow the belief that goaltenders are voodoo, the voodoo ended up biting Tom Fitzgerald, and now that contract is kind of an albatross around the New Jersey Devils. I think the Luke Hughes situation with New Jersey, because his brother is there, and there were all signs pointing to them being able to unite all three brothers. I thought that Luke Hughes kind of got preferential treatment, and again, this one's all on Tom Fitzgerald. The contract that Luke Hughes got coming out of his entry-level deal, I firmly believe, ruffled some feathers in that room. And a lot of people in that organization looked the other way at Luke Hughes' performances. Whereas if someone like Simon Nemec played the same way, he would end up in the American Hockey League. But that was never a threat or a reality for someone like Luke Hughes. So it's kind of a mixed bag with Tom Fitzgerald. I look at, early on, it looked really good, taking over from Ray Shero, was putting together a team that was starting to win, starting to make the playoffs. The goaltending was the missing piece. And by the end, because of all the no-trade clauses with the contracts, the New Jersey Devils were frozen and couldn't really do anything to help improve their team. So I firmly believe that managers and their second shot at it learn from their mistakes and are better general managers. Look no further than Kyle Dubas with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who's done incredible things there. So I tend not to judge GMs based on their first kick at it. That's why I wouldn't put too much stock into what happened with the New Jersey Devils.
Jeff Merrick is with us. Jeff, before I hand it over to Willie, the new GM, whoever it is, has a big decision to make about the direction of this franchise. As you mentioned, it's great that the Predators have dusted themselves off and surged into the Western Conference playoff race after how poorly things were going early in the season. But your friend Elliot Freeman said to us, and I thought this was an astute observation, the birth certificates don't change, despite the fact that the Predators are playing so well. Their core players are still in their mid to upper 30s, some in their early 30s, but they're all in their 30s. So this is what I would ask you as someone who has a perspective of the entire league. How would you assess the Predators' future? And do you see a team that is close to truly competing again in the near term?
What is the only thing that is undefeated?
Father Time.
Bingo. I don't care who you are, it catches up to you. And we've seen teams make this mistake before, have a belief that even though it didn't work for other teams, it can work for us. You know, in a lot of ways, I'm a firm believer in the old theater saying, leave the stage while they're still clapping. This is a great story for the Nashville Predators right now. And everyone's clapping. It's awesome. I'm so I'm happy for Barry Trotz. I'm happy for Andrew Burnett. I'm really like, Nashville, going back to day one, has always been a first-class operation at every single level. They've always been one of the easiest organizations to deal with from my little corner of the media universe. I got nothing but love and respect for the Nashville Predators. Having said all of that, don't get fooled, right? Don't get hoodwinked here. This is an aging team that even if they make the playoffs this season, I don't think anyone expects them to do any damage. This still has to be an organization that has an eye towards the future. And when this team rebuilds and reloads and redevelops, whatever you want, renovates themselves, it's gonna be the Brady Martins that are leading this thing. And that's not to say that you shouldn't have veterans around. Absolutely you should. But I don't think that the Nashville Predators should lie to themselves and believe that there's something that they're not.
Jeff Merrick is with us. Jeff, this is Willie. It's good to talk to you. It's been a little bit.
Great to hear your voice again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned Brady Martin, and I know you've been watching close, and you follow the Canadian juniors very closely here. So that's a guy that will be really critical to this transition to a younger roster for sure. So tell us what you're seeing here recently.
So I went and saw him play last Friday in London. It was he plays with Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds of the OHL. They're finishing up their first-round series against the London Knights. They dusted him in game five, and front and center, best player on the ice, full stop, last call, all of it was Brady Martin. And London played him hard. Like, London is full of, like, really big, strong players. Like, Brady Martin's a big kid, too. Like, he's no slouch. But, I mean, they had, like, oak trees going at him all game long. And he fought through everything. He pushed back. He scored this, oh my God, you guys will love it. He scored this goal against the London Knights, which is pretty much the nail in the coffin. And then with his hockey stick, did the playing the violin as he skated by the London bench, serenading them as their playoffs were over. Like, there's a chip on his shoulder. He's an aggressive player. He's a skilled player. He's from a farm in St. Jacobs, Ontario. So, you know, even going into his draft year with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, you know, he never had a gym membership, never had any more than a shooting pad in his backyard. He just, you know, played on ponds and ended up like this super elite player with Waterloo AAA in his U16 year. He's got that, like, and you guys have seen it before, there's like gym strong and then there's farm boy strong. Brady Martin's farm boy strong. Like, the grip strength is in his forearms are like Popeye. Now, the shoulder injury at the World Juniors really did set him back. Healthy now, you know, probably the most, you know, game to game in and game out, probably the most competitive player game in and game out in the entire OHL. He's pretty close to being a full-time NHL ready. You guys had a taste of Brady Martin last year. He's had another season of development and putting more weight and strength on. This is a player that, first of all, I love, one of my favorite players in the OHL. This guy is built for Smashville because he's skilled, he's tough, and from a media point of view, this kid is charming. You are going to love talking to Brady Martin, and he's got that kind of aw shucks farm boy about him too that really plays well.
Interesting stuff. Jeff Merrick talking to us. So, Jeff, let's get back to this philosophical discussion of a GM. When it's Tom Fitzgerald or a name that our listeners know, because you can go down the resume and say, here's what happened this year and that year when he was the GM, as opposed to some of these other guys we're hearing about that are assistant GMs on some really successful organizations right now. How do you try to differentiate who's a better candidate? Somebody who has had a run at it but maybe had some ups and downs, as opposed to a guy who is the, quote, up-and-comer?
It's a great question. You know, really, it comes down to feel. Like, this is like this. There's no way to quantify how you feel about a general manager. Like, I personally think that Bill Scott, the assistant GM of the Edmonton Oilers, should be a GM by now. You look at how many different general managers he's been with, and he sat, you know, next to some of the greats. You know, with, you know, Ken Holland and Stan Bowman. Like, he sat with some legendary figures. And that's rubbed off on him. You know, Scott White's been with the Dallas Stars, sitting at the feet of Jim Nill for a long time. Brett Peterson is, you know, now just, you know, named the GM of the national team, as well, the United States national team, who's got a strong resume now, punctuated with two Stanley Cups and being there watching this team build with Bill Zito. So it's a tricky one, because to your point, you have someone who already has the experience of having two hands on the wheel. And yes, he was there. Tom Fitzgerald was when Ray Shiro was the general manager. But there's also a lot of value you place in someone who's been mentored by some of the legends in the game and how much that has rubbed off on them. And from all the names that we are hearing, and I just, you know, mentioned three of them, and there are more. You want to throw John Chayka into that mix as well, who's a really unique candidate too. It all comes down to philosophical fit. You know, Tom Fitzgerald will come in and present his vision. for how he sees the next generation of the Nashville Predators. What do you want to do now? What do you want to do in 3 years? What do you want to do in 5 years? Bill Scott will do the same thing. Chyka will do the same thing. White will do the same thing. Peterson will do the same thing. And then you try to find that manager that you connect with, right? Like, I know that, you know, one of the things that you look at the Buffalo Sabres, one of the things that Terry Pegula, the owner, you know, had a hard time with because he was so busy with both his wife's health and also owning the Buffalo Bills, is he just didn't have the time to spend to get to know a new general manager. And one of the things now, more so than ever, that we keep hearing about in the NHL, other sports have talked about this forever, but hockey is always last at the trough, is managing upward. And that's the real skill now. Everyone can manage downwards, but can you manage upwards and be in sync with your owner or your president of hockey operations? And that's tricky. And that's just going to come down to vibe, to feel, and being on the same philosophical page as the candidates that you are interviewing.
We got time for one more, Adam, or do we need to let Jeff go?
We got time for another one if Jeff does.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's get Jeff's opinion on this race, because every day the last couple of weeks here, Jeff, as you mentioned, you didn't think you were gonna. It's almost like house money because the Predators were so far back, but now you've got a legit race here. We're watching the scoreboard every night. What are you looking for this last week and a half to determine the second wild card here?
Goaltending, right? When in doubt, goaltending. When in doubt, I mean, Justus Enunen had a great game, as we just saw against the Anaheim Ducks. Was a 43 save performance. UC Saros has, you know, been excellent. I think when you get that, because you look in sort of, you know, chunks of games, right? Goalies do this all the time. Coaches do this more than anybody else. They look in sort of like, okay, these are the next five games and these are the points you want. Goalies do the same thing. And I think when you're looking at like this, the last few games determining a playoff spot, I think you always look to goaltending. And I think also in Nashville's favor here, since, you know, these games are going to have a playoff feel around them, it's always good to have a lot of veteran players. Like, look, I love the San Jose Sharks. They're a lot of fun, but they're really showing their age here down the stretch. And they really showed their age last night against the Edmonton Oilers, where Connor McDavid just said, you know, this is cute what you're doing here, Macklin, but, you know, we're sitting at the grown-ups table here. So the advantage Nashville has, they have a lot of veteran players, but I always turn to goaltending in situations like this. And I always remember, you know, one of the great lines about goaltending from Harry Sinden, the old general manager of the Boston Bruins. And he would say, goaltending is like oxygen. I only think about it when I don't have it. Ask any coach who doesn't have goaltending down the stretch. Man, it can really suffocate everything and nullify all the good work that you're doing. So I look at these situations and I say, whoever's got the best goaltender is coming out alive here.
Jeff Merrick has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donicky is the host of The Sheet on Daily Faceoff. You can listen Monday through Friday starting at noon Central. Jeff, fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for your time. Let's do it again soon.
Pleasure is all mine. Buzz back anytime.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to what Jeff had to say. A lot to get into there. We'll also look ahead to tonight's matchup between the Predators and Mammoth in Salt Lake City. I also have some reservations about something that I heard earlier today as it relates to the Predators, and we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Tee it up with us at the 5th Annual 615 Open, May 28th at Hermitage Golf Course. We are once again supporting Folds of Honor to help them fund life-changing scholarships for families of America's fallen heroes. Register now to play or sponsor at 615open.com. Today, Vanderbilt Baseball takes on Oklahoma at Hawkins Field. First pitch is at 6. Catch all of the action on 94.9. The Fan coverage is presented by Gary Force Acura. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Derek and I are live out at 5 Iron Golf, 202 21st Avenue South in Midtown. We do have a voucher for 2 free hours of golf and a Trackman golf simulator, a $180 value. It could be yours for absolutely nothing if you stop by 5 Iron Golf and join the raffle. So what's stopping you? It's a beautiful day. come on out to Five Iron Golf and win 2 free hours of golf and a Trackman golf simulator. By the way, Derek, Joey from Bellevue says, Derek Mason, good at golf? Didn't you break your hand once swinging a club?
Yes, I can say it now. Yes, I did. That was a long time ago.
When was that?
This was
when you were playing?
Yeah, I was here. It was my fifth year, I think.
How'd you do that?
Trying to hit the golf ball, obviously. I was swinging off the tee and tried to take the skin off the ball. Excuse me. Tried to take the skin off the ball, and I hit the ground first.
Ooh.
And after that, I knew it. I knew my hand was broke. But I couldn't tell anybody.
How long were you out?
I wasn't out.
You played through it?
No. It was an off season.
Oh,
so
okay. That makes a little bit more sense.
I didn't say anything to anybody. I went to work, and, you know, the rest is history.
Willie, have you had any mishaps on the golf course before?
Well, depends on what you talk as a mishap. I've had plenty of mishaps where balls have gone to the wrong places, for sure. But no major injuries, I don't think, on the golf course.
I was telling this to Derek. Before Topgolf actually arrived in Nashville, Topgolf had an event at Nissan Stadium where you could hit balls off the concourse onto the field. And I was working at the Tennessean at the time, and I said, why not? I'll go out there. And I dented multiple seats at Nissan Stadium. So if you have been sitting in one of the end zones, I'm not sure which one, but if you've been sitting in one of the end zones and there's been a golf ball-sized dent in your seat for the past few years, my bad. But
I have broken a windshield.
okay. Bury the lead, Willie Donick.
Yeah. Well, that was a long time ago, so statute of limitations. It was embarrassing. I was, 14 or 15 years old, and it was a kind of a city golf course, so there were cars driving around, and I hooked one, and it was bouncing, and it caught the guy he was driving, so I had to walk over there, and he was really nice, thankfully. But you can imagine being 14 and walking up to a car that you just shattered their windshield. That's not a good feel.
Man.
No, not at all.
No, it's not. You're better than me, Willie. I'd have probably hightailed it.
Pew!
Just run out of there.
Hey,
we kind of wanted to keep playing.
14-year-old Derek? Nah. No, I'd have probably been
that
scared.
Glass.
Especially if it was in a neighborhood, I'd probably been scared that they would have came to my parents' house and told on me anyway. Mm. So I probably would have stayed there.
Okay. Good to know. So we've all had golf-related mishaps in our lives in one form or another. So we've got that in common as well. Great stuff from Jeff Marek, one of my favorites. Glad he could join the show. The Predators are back in action tonight. The final game of this road trip, the final road game of the regular season in Utah against the Mammoth. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 102.5 The Game. The Mammoth, a 4-point lead over the Predators in the wild card race. The Mammoth have a game in hand. We did talk at one point about the Predators catching up to the Mammoth and finishing in Wild Card 1, which would be great for the Predators because they would avoid the Central Division gauntlet of Colorado, Dallas, and Minnesota. If the Predators have any hope of actually making that a thing, they need to win tonight because the Mammoth would then have a 6-point lead if they win in regulation. The Mammoth would have a 6-point lead. The Predators would have 3 games left. The Mammoth would have a game in hand, so that would probably erase any potential of that. But the Predators are in the second wild card spot, 1 point ahead of the LA Kings, who have a game in hand. As Jeff mentioned, the San Jose Sharks had 2 games in hand, but they blew one last night, losing in regulation to the Edmonton Oilers. So the Sharks 3 points back of the Predators with a game in hand. Willie, let's set up this matchup between Nashville and Utah. The Mammoths come in having won 4 games in a row. They have averaged, this is not a typo, 6.25 goals per game during this 4-game winning streak. A balanced attack by the Mammoth. They can go up and down the ice. Willie, your read on this matchup between Nashville and Utah to wrap up this road trip?
Extremely difficult. I think this will be the best team that they've played on this road trip. The western part of the road trip, anyway. If you count Tampa Bay, obviously Tampa Bay is a great team as well. It's been that long since the Predators have played a home game. But you mentioned it. Utah is just overwhelming teams offensively right now with their depth. They have a lot of really high-end players at the top, but also that secondary wave, which is really tough to account for. And the Predators look like they'll be without Nick Hague again tonight, so that's not going to make it any easier. I think they've managed to adapt pretty well, but they're going to have to lean on their goaltending again tonight. I think that they're going to have a chance to win. They've won two games in this building, and in both games, UC Saros, I think, has kept them in the game, and he's won the goaltender matchup. Because if there is one thing that Utah still is not quite certain about, Kirill Vemelka is a workhorse, and he is leading the league in starts, but I still think he's not viewed as an elite goalie. Now, he's capable of being elite on a particular night, but I think Nashville's way of doing this, they're going to have to do well on special teams, which has been a big strength for the Predators. They're going to have to hang in there 5-on-5, and they're going to have to get better goaltending than Utah tonight.
Let's focus on the goaltending for a moment. UC Saros will start in goal tonight for the Nashville Predators against the Utah Mammoth. And when I saw that news, as first posted by Brooks Bratton of NashvillePredators.com, I didn't love it because Justus Onanen, as we mentioned yesterday, had an historic performance against the Anaheim Ducks. And I am not exaggerating. In addition to my duties here at 102.5 The Game, I work for a data company called SportLogic, which works with all NHL teams. And SportLogic has a stat called goals saved above expected. Justus Onanen had the single best performance of any goaltender based on that stat in the history of SportLogic, which started back in 2016-2017, that NHL season. So the best single-game performance by goals saved above expected in the past 10 years, both regular season and playoffs, I learned earlier today. So I like the idea of riding that hot hand, especially against the team, Willie, that is so dynamic, which Utah is. And I want to make something abundantly clear so that nobody accuses me of hating UC Saros, because I do not hate UC Saros. I would have gone with Onanen here just because of how well he played. He got the shutout. You give UC Saros some extra rest because if the playoffs come, if the Predators make the playoffs, you know Saros is going to be in goal. I personally, Willie, would have gone back to Onanen tonight, but the choice was Saros. I understand it, but I would have chosen to go back to Onanen.
Well, let's and I think it's obviously something that they weighed heavily. I don't think this was as automatic as it's been in the past, that, you know, your backup goalie plays the back half of back-to-backs, and then down the stretch in a playoff race, you're not even blinking an eye. You're going with your man. I think there are a couple of things to think about here. Number one, I think first and foremost, UC Saros is their guy, right?
Indeed. In
the big games, you go with your guy, and he has been playing well. If he had been struggling, then I think it would be even more leaning towards the hot hand, if you will, a guy who just played a phenomenal game. And he's played more than just one phenomenal game. Onanen has been really good since the Olympic break, and he's actually been very, very good since the time the Predators started to turn their season around. His season started turning around when the Predators did, and that was that game in Detroit that jump-started everything the night before Thanksgiving. That was Onanen's first win. He hadn't had a win all year until then. But he has really steadily improved. I've been talking to Barry Trotz. I talked to Mitch Korn about this. Benny Vanderklok, the goaltending coach, deserves a lot of credit because behind the scenes, they've worked a lot, and Justus Onanen has improved. And so that's just a good sign. They've got him locked up for a couple more years. And so that is, you know, that's a trade. Swapping Scott Wedgwood for Justus Onanen to, quote, get younger, that probably had a negative effect in the short term, but hopefully will have a big positive effect in the long term. And all that being said, though, UC Saros, if he didn't start tonight, then you would have Saturday against Minnesota, and he would have gone, what, 5-6 days without a start there. So the rhythm of a starter might be affected there. And so let's say Onanen plays tonight. It plays really well again. Do you sit Saros again, knowing that he's the guy? Right. I think it was just easiest to fall back on Saros is playing well. He's not outplaying Justus Onanen. But because he's the man, you keep him in there. And he has won two games in this building already. So you put all that together, and I think they decided to roll with the guy.
All of that is reasonable. It makes sense in theory. I do remember, I don't know if you remember this, Willie, but several years ago, I remember Carter Hutton having a fantastic start in some random regular season game at Florida, and then he came back and started the next game, and that was a huge deal because Pecorine never sat out of consecutive games when he was healthy. I wish I could find my story for the Tennessean about that because I remember writing about that because it was just so rare. So everything you're saying is valid. I just think with how well Onanen played, especially if you're going to make the playoffs and Saros is going to be your guy, he's not going to get rest. So if you give him an extra couple of days, I hear your point on rhythm, but a couple of extra days of rest for UC Saros I don't think would be a terrible thing. But when I first saw that announcement, I was a bit disappointed because I thought Onanen should get another go. 615-737. Go ahead.
Adam,
yes,
I think
go ahead.
Just a quick point. I think I don't know what period of the season that was, the example you said about Hutton.
Yeah, it's
but
a good question.
I think it's doubly tough when there's only four games left.
That's
right?
True.
And you're gearing
That's
up
true.
Towards you got to make it. You know, it's all about getting to game one of a playoff series. How do you get there? How do you get there feeling the best? And I do think if they had decided to go with Onanen tonight, that would be a bigger story than going with Saros tonight. Do you agree? And then once it becomes a story, then the entire locker room is like, oh, you're not going with Saros? Like, I think around the league, that would have a bigger reaction, despite how well Onanen played the other night.
Well,
would you agree?
I'll answer that on the other side because I do have a point to make on that. It's a good question, though. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators. They are back in action tonight. Their final road game of the regular season in Utah. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 1025 The Game. 615-737-1025. Let us know your thoughts on the Predators' decision to go back to Saros tonight after Onanen's performance on Tuesday. We are broadcasting from the Bisbee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. We are live at 5 Iron Golf, 202 21st Avenue South, here in Nashville, in Midtown. We will be back here tomorrow as well. So if you missed us today, come out tomorrow. By the way, Willie, I found my story on Carter Hutton and Pecorine. That was in February of 2016.
Yeah.
I had to really dig back into the Wayback Machine to find that.
Wow.
But that was in February of 2016. So your point on that is well taken. But before we went to break, you brought up an interesting point. You said that if Onanen started again tonight, that would be a story around the league, that the backup goalie for the Predators is starting consecutive games in a playoff hunt. And Derek said to me during the break that he agrees with you.
I agree with
you. But I have a counterpoint
I think more than that as well, D-Mace, internally, in the locker room. I think if the coach comes in and says, we're going with Onanen again,
yes,
it'd be like Jimmy Chipwood not taking the last shot. Remember in Hoosiers, Gene Hackman comes in. I'm going to use Jimmy as a decoy. And everybody looked at him like, what are you talking about? Get the ball to Jimmy. I just think that's a little bit of what's at play here.
But this is the age-old sort of dilemma. Do you play the guy that is hot or do you play the guy you trust? Especially during this period of a season when – you know, you're fighting for your NHL playoff life, and you can't afford to lose a game. You need points. You need games. So do you play the guy you trust, or do you play the guy that just came off a historic night the last time he was in net? I agree with you. If you start Onanen, Big Juice,
yeah.
Then I think you cause sort of a, not a rift, but you players question, like especially veteran players, because they're like, listen, I understand the young guy, he had a historic game, but this is the guy we came to the dance with, mm-hmm. you know, and this is what you paid him for, moments like this. And say if Onanen does win, people will use that against Saros again.
Well, that brings me to my point, because again, the number I keep citing, goals saved above expected, what that tells you is how many goals a goalie should have allowed based on the quality of shots that he faced. Based on the shot quality that the Ducks had on Tuesday night, the Predators should have allowed nearly 6 goals, and they won 5-0. Think about your favorite, well, not maybe not your favorite. Think about the best goaltenders in the NHL over the past 10 years. Just think of one off the top of your head. Onanen's performance in that game on Tuesday was better than any of those goaltenders you're thinking of. And I know it was one game, but it was incredibly impressive. Here would be my counter to your points, Willie and Derek, and I think you both make good points. I hesitate to use the P word, perception. But if Saros, well, he is starting tonight, so if Saros, as he starts tonight, lays an egg against Utah, you accidentally created a goaltending controversy within your fan base. So that would be my counter, that Onanen played so well. And again, I'm not suggesting, mm-hmm. I want to make this abundantly clear, I am not suggesting that Justus Onanen should supplant UC Saros as the number one goaltender for the Nashville Predators. That is not happening. I would not endorse that.
Mm-hmm.
Saros is the man, as Willie said. And Saros, if the Predators make the playoffs and it's game one against the Colorado Avalanche in Denver, it's going to be UC Saros in the crease for the Nashville Predators. All I'm saying is, we talked earlier this week about how I feel there's this perception that UC Saros is not a big game goaltender. This is another big game. It's mm-hmm. another playoff caliber game. They need all the points they can get. The Utah Mammoth, as I mentioned, have averaged 6.25 goals per game over the past 4 games, winning all 4 games. If they have a performance like that again tonight against Saros, we're going to come in tomorrow and people are going to be clamoring for Onanen to be the starting goaltender. So I think in a way,
well, but there's
a bit of a controversy either
way. Either way,
yeah. In what context?
Well, I mean, you could give up a lot of goals to a team that's been scoring a lot of goals and not play bad. I think,
true.
You know, if he plays poorly, that.
But you know as well as I do that people don't look at. But you know as well as I do that people don't always look at the context. They see the box score that says Saros gave up 6 goals. He stinks. People don't always use the same context that you and I do, Willie.
Let's bring up another example. Last year in the playoffs, what was it, second or third round, Pete DeBoer of the Stars benched Jake Oettinger, who was their guy. Benched him in a huge playoff game. And it created huge shockwaves, and he never recovered. They fired him because of that right there. It's because internally it was such a huge.
He did throw him under the bus.
Story. He threw him under the bus. And you don't do that to your guy. We talked about it on the show. And Peter DeBoer is no longer the coach of the Stars, I think, largely because of that.
Craig on our text line says, if you're not going to trust your nearly $8 million goalie when it matters most, why are you paying him? Also, what are the chances Onanen has back-to-back historic games? I'm not suggesting that Onanen is going to have or would have had a game like he did on Tuesday. That was the game of his life. My initial reaction when I saw that Saros was starting was, I was kind of hoping that Onanen would get another crack at it. But that's Craig's text. Chuck says, if UC Saros gives up a goal in the first 5 minutes, I'm going to be so pissed. That was a thing earlier in the season, that mm-hmm. Saros, again, context is important. It's not all his fault that he gave up all those goals in the first 5 minutes, but he wears them.
Yes.
So that's, you know, that's sort of my point. One texter says, if Juice lays an egg, little Juice, Soros, if Juice lays an egg, I think we need to look at what's happening in front of him. Big Juice having to save that many high danger chances isn't necessarily a good thing, in my opinion. And I did look at this, Willie. You may have seen this on when I posted it on X. The team defense has actually been worse slightly in front of Onanen than it has been in front of Soros since the Olympic break, but not by a significant degree.
Well, let me just tell you, to all of you that are going to be watching this game, Utah is going to get a lot of scoring chances. They're scoring goals in bushels right now, and nobody has been able to stop them. They're going to have to score some goals to win this game. You're not going to beat them 1-0 tonight. It's not likely anyway. You never know in hockey, but the goaltending position is going to be a tough position for the Predators tonight. And so I wouldn't judge what happens in the first 5 minutes or whatever. It's, you know, what do you get a good game from your guy in the next biggest game of the year?
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on the Predators and the goaltending decision tonight. UC Soros starting for the Predators in Salt Lake City against the Mammoth. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 102.5 The Game. But coming up next, we welcome in our friend John Glennon of the Nashville Post. We'll talk Predators and Titans with our friend Glennon coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.